Hammurabi also began building temples, and he issued a misharam specifically for the debtors of Larsa. So this was not an edict that applied to his entire kingdom, but to the area that was most recently acquired. And again, presumably this would bring him the loyalty, or at least gratitude, of his new subjects. Hammurabi had created a unified regional state in Babylonia. He would extend his reach up the Euphrates River over the next few years, capturing and destroying the city of Mari by 1761 BC. And this is what we'll discuss in the next lecture. Because of the numerous sources we have from Hammurabi's period, it conveys a sense of his personality. And we get an impression of a very complete documentation for Hammurabi's rule. This is probably misleading. Just because we have lots of texts for Hammurabi's rule doesn't mean that we know everything about what happened. And we also have to keep in mind that these letters and other edicts are official documents. They are not a diary recording Hammurabi's ambition or his personality. And even the letters were not really specifically dictated in that they record Hammurabi's exact words, but they were written by scribes and then approved by the king. It's very much like a speechwriter for a politician, who has to give a sense of the personality and the goals of the leader, but these are not the exact words that a president or prime minister might choose. There's also a lot of official speak in these documents. So there are phrases that are repeated frequently, and this also weakens the immediacy that we can sometimes think we see in Hammurabi's letters. That said, there are several letters and reports about Hammurabi that communicate his behavior, usually his moods, which are quite often very bad. He was a short-tempered leader. Those who usually suffered his wrath were envoys from other kings, sometimes his own officials, but usually foreign envoys were the target of Hammurabi's outbursts. One of the reasons that they incurred his wrath is that they might be passing on bad news or requests that irritated the king. Zimri Lim wanted his troops back after Hammurabi had had them for 2 years, after he had conquered the Elamites and Larsa, and Hammurabi didn't want to give them up. 2,000 well-trained soldiers are quite a good weapon to have at your side. On one occasion, when Zimri Lim's emissaries were asking Hammurabi yet again to release his troops, they were not given robes, which were the equivalent of a diplomatic present that would be given from one king to the dignitaries, the representatives of another king. At the same time, even though Zimri Lim's officials were ignored, officials from another king were given the robes. So when Zimri Lim's people complained about their treatment, Hammurabi snapped that, "From the break of dawn, you don't stop annoying me. Are you in charge to decide about garments in my palace? I dress whomever I like and don't dress whomever I dislike. I will never again dress simple messengers at the occasion of a meal." Hardly something that's going to smooth over a diplomatic relationship. His own officials also suffered from Hammurabi's impatience, as in this letter describing a demand from Hammurabi that accountants come from Larsa to Babylon, and that's a distance of about 100 miles, as soon as possible. Hammurabi writes, "They should travel day and night, so they arrive in Babylon in 2 days. Which would be somewhat arduous for anyone. And he sent a follow-up letter demanding to know where they were and why they were sleeping. Like most kings of the era, Hammurabi engaged in backroom diplomacy and double-dealing, pitting rulers against each other, making promises he had no intention of keeping. And we'll see this aspect of his personality illustrated most specifically in his relationship with Zimri-Lim in the next lecture.